I'm going to take you back to a time over 500 years before the birth of Christ. What was left of the state of Israel was overrun by the Babylonians about 600 years before the birth of Christ. And thousands of Jews were forced into exile. They were marched across the desert from Palestine to round about the region of Baghdad, what we call Persia and so on, the Persian Gulf. And a young man went with that group, a young Jewish man of exceptional talent. And he rose to extraordinary positions of power in the Babylonian government, such as it was. And that man was Daniel. And so I'm going to read to you now a wonderful story, or part of a wonderful story. I think Barry's going to finish it off for me later on, about this young man. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisers and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, that according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. And the king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you."
Well, good morning. Wonderful to have you here. It's good to be with you, especially those who are visiting today. Thanks for coming. Can I talk to you today about how do you live in a corrupt society? Because that's what Daniel had to do. And I guess when you look at all the way the world is changing today, most of us would feel we live in a corrupt society. Because the ones to blame are the politicians, aren't they? You know what politicians are like. To understand the role of a politician, You've just got to study the origin of the word. Politician, poly meaning many, ticks meaning bloodsuckers. And so these poor guys and girls who give up so much as to go into politics are often the ones that we hold up to jokes like that. In actual fact, I admire them greatly. I think most of them are there for the right reasons. I don't think their parties help sometimes, because you don't have a lot of say in what you believe, really. You're forced into the mould of whichever side you happen to be on. But there is a lot of heartache in those who go into politics, and I don't begrudge the money they're paid. I don't begrudge that they're honourable. Almost all of them are honourable people. I heard a thing when I was in America about a politician making a comment, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. And I think there'd be a lot of truth about that in Canberra too. Because whoever the politician is, they've always got half the people who don't vote for them. They've always got half the people who probably are very critical of them, and even some of their own side. Now, what on earth's got that got to do with any of this? This week, I was looking at photos out of Paris, set in World War II under German occupation. There were the great buildings, and many of you have been to Paris, and you know the Louvre and the Arc de Triomphe and the Eiffel Tower, and these things that are so identified with Parisian life. And the photographs had the swastika hanging from them. What would it be like to be in those circumstances? In the 1940s, Australia came very close too, didn't we? It was only after the war it was admitted that our politicians had drawn what was called the Brisbane Line, knowing we couldn't defend the whole of Australia, so we would try to defend up to there. But we too could be going through today a society in which it isn't our flag that is flying, and maybe not even our language that our children are speaking. The situation, as Bruce described, was a desperate one for the people who lived in Judah. I mentioned last week that the Jewish people divided into two groups. They separated entirely. The northern kingdom was called Israel, and the lower kingdom, which had two tribes, was named Judah. Now, the 10 tribes were the people who most rebelled against their history, their God, their ethics and everything else, and they were carried away into captivity back in the 700s. But Judah did better and had some kings that were honest and faithful and the people, but gradually deteriorated. And as we talked last week with Isaiah, he was sent by God to say to them, you're ruining your society. You will be taken into captive. You will lose it, what you have. And so they were taken over by the Babylonians. What the Babylonians did was they took almost the whole population and moved them to where they wanted them. And they left behind the elderly and the sick. And so most of them were taken away. Now, our story is about, in the book of Daniel, is about Daniel himself and three other young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were taken captive. But what they did, they looked at the finest, the best young people, and they set them aside and they trained them so that they could be part of the leadership of the country. The first crisis they had was a crisis about food, and because Jews are very particular about what they eat, and the king wanted them groomed up ready for him, and they were altogether different, and so they wouldn't bend on it. They said, look, Aspenaz, who was sent by the king to straighten them out and to get them eating this food the king wanted, they said, look, just give us a trial for 10 days. Let us eat what we believe is good for us and see at the end of it if we're okay. Well, he knew if he didn't look after him, he could lose his own head. It was a bit like North Korea in those days, all over the place. And so they they talked him into doing this, and at the end of 10 days, he admitted they looked better than the others, and so he let them keep up their standards. They took that risk, and it's a big risk, isn't it? If you're in a, you know, if you're in a North Korea and you say, I don't want to follow your rules, that could be a bit hot. Well, that's where we stand. How do you live for Christ? How do you live as a Christian person in a society that doesn't share your values and that you might feel is becoming more and more corrupt? I was thinking about this and I thought, well, number one, you've got to know where to draw the line, don't you? Where you draw the line. Remember, Jay Bassick. We all love Jay. Jay Bassick preaches here quite often. Jay's on 2CH tonight, by the way, at 8 o'clock for 3 hours. 2GB, sorry, 2GB for 3 hours on Talkback Radio. He'll be leading it, so he's done that for years, of course, at different times. But Jay was talking about, he was at this course, and they asked you to write down the things you really think are essential, and you write them down, and he said, now write down the other side of the page, the things you'd be willing to die for. Now, what are the things that you won't give up no matter what society does? John the Apostle was probably the nicest of the apostles, do you think? He was the one that Jesus loved. That's how he's described in the Bible, so he must have been a pretty good fella. John wrote this, he said, love not the world. Now, he used the word cosmos in the original, which meant the world system, not that loves nature. No, he said, love not the world system. In 1 John he writes, love not the world nor the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. In other words, he's saying, don't fall in love with the world system. We have to set some standards, don't we? I was reading a fascinating story. I looked at the photo and tracked it down. His name was Landon Messer. Has anyone ever heard of Landon Messer? There was this famous photograph from Nuremberg at the early stages of Hitler's adoration by the people. There are thousands of people gathered there. And Hitler, if you've been to Nuremberg, you've probably been to where he gave that great speech and where all the troops were arrayed and all his followers were. And he was up high there with his business and all the people are saluting afterwards in excitement. And in a photograph of, it takes in hundreds of people, one man sat like this. That was Mr. Landon Messer. Among thousands of people saying, Heil Hitler! One man sat like this. In 1931, that man had joined the Nazi Party. He did it because Hitler was a brilliant politician and had brought Germany out of abject poverty and difficulties. But by 1933, something happened. He fell in love. You know all about falling in love. You just got married this year. And most of us know about falling in love, don't we? He fell in love. But he fell in love with a Jewish girl in Germany in Hitler's reign. So he was put out of the party. He couldn't be a Nazi anymore. And then as time went on, he wasn't allowed to marry her because she was a Jew. And then when things got worse, some think it was after the photograph he was identified, they were arrested. He was sent to a concentration camp for 3 years. She was sent to an extermination camp. She was pregnant, by the way. She gave birth to a little girl and then she was killed. The little girl did live through an orphanage and lived on. Landon Messer, when he was released, they made him go into the army and he was killed in the last year of the war. There was a man who drew a line and said, I'm not going to cross this. Yeah. Now, we're in a society where decisions are made politically and by pressure that want to push us beyond what we feel comfortable with. And so, Forget your comfort level, because that's just tradition, isn't it? That's what you've been brought up to and all that. But where do you draw a line? Daniel was told, you cannot do this, you cannot pray to anyone other than the king 3 times a day. Kneels by an open window and prays to God. He knew they were setting him up. He was so influential, he was about to be put in charge of everything under the king, and these politicians were out to get him. And they did. And he was taken and thrown into the lions. Now that seemed to happen a bit in history, didn't it, where they were fed to lions? It was not uncommon in the days following Jesus where Christians were fed to lions in the Colosseum, and it was entertainment. You would go instead of seeing the football match, although it's very similar, isn't it? I was watching rugby league yesterday and I thought it's a bit similar to the Colosseum. If they did that to me, I'd never get up again, even when I was healthy, young. Daniel is put in with the lions. And here is one of the great stories that comes out of the scriptures, that God protected him. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego were told, you have to bow down to the golden statue of the king, and you're to do that every time the music plays. And they wouldn't do it. This was against what they believed. They'd drawn a line. And they were thrown into a fiery furnace, and the king was sorry about that because they were outstanding young men, but he couldn't get back on his word. So they're in this burning furnace, and they could see the fire and they could see the men, but they were not burned. And the king said, I see a fourth person, like a son of God with them. Story came out of North Korea. You may have read it just recently, where the claim was made of a man who was thrown into fire and didn't burn. Thrown into fire because of his Christianity, didn't burn. Testimony was there. I read it just this week. He said, well, do I believe that? Well, one of the difficulties of being in the Western world, isn't it, that we got educated out of miracles. It's all science, you know. As if science is an impregnable force that cannot be argued with. The funny thing is, the first course I ever did in doing my Bachelor of Arts down in Victoria, in a secular university with pagans, was a course that was about the history and philosophy of science, proving that science always changes its mind and that this change does not come from the scientific forces that are there in the middle doing it. It comes from people who are sceptical of the establishment. And so science, which when I was a kid growing up, you had the feeling, oh, that's scientific fact. You know, you can't argue with science. Well, science argues with itself all the time. It's an evolving thing. We've got to set limits. We've also got to recognise that sometimes we'll get attacked. I'm hesitant sometimes to express an opinion in certain company because I know it will be unpopular. Even if I believe it, and I believe it's moral, you might be more courageous. But sometimes I'm careful of that. Why? Because I don't like to be ridiculed. I don't like people to argue with me or feel bad about me or write me off as some narrow-minded bigot or something. But these young men, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego with kneeling down, Daniel with praying, they wouldn't bend. You know, you've reached the limit, okay, you're going to persecute me. But in both cases, they gave a similar speech. They said that, you know, my God's in charge. If he wants me to come through at all, he'll come through. If not, I'm still sticking with him. Well, these challenges are going on all around the world. We heard 2 weeks ago our speaker talking about more people are being martyred as Christians today than at any time in history. Christians now, more being killed than even in the days when they threw them into the fiery furnace or threw them into a lion's den. Did any of you ever hear Gladys Aylward speak? You know Gladys Aylward? Do you know who she is? Yeah, a few heads nodding. She's less than 5 foot tall. She passed away a few years ago now. She's less than 5 foot tall. She had no education. She worked as a cleaner and a chimney sweep. She felt God called her to be a missionary. So she went to the London Missionary Society. And here's this little lady, and this is when ladies weren't really expected to be very productive in leadership and doing those sorts of things. She turns up and she meets a committee and she says, God has called me to be a missionary. Well, they put her into a class for a while and then said, look, you're not suitable, you're not educated enough and you're not big enough and all that, so she had no part. So she took her life savings and she caught a train. She caught a train all the way across Europe, right across Russia, right over to the sea near Japan. And that's when the Russians stopped her going any further. So she escaped them and got on a Japanese freighter and got to Japan. And then the British guy who was running the embassy, he helped her get onto another ship that went to China. And there, in China, she set up an incredible missionary meeting, a service that just went on and on. She started a thing called the Inn of the Sixth Happiness. It was based on the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. We've got nine. She called the Inn of the Sixth Happiness. I never researched why she left three out. Maybe she didn't want to do those. But anyway, she started this, and it was like a motel where people could come and stay. And she and the woman who worked with her witnessed about Christ and led many of the Chinese to Christ. Then they just knew there were so many children who were orphaned. And so they took them in. They had over 100 children. It was then that the Japanese attacked China. And they were slaughtering many, many people, kids included. And they didn't know what would happen to these orphans. They were frightened for their life. So they took them and she led them on this incredible journey up over a whole mountain range to get to an area that was beyond where the Japanese were interested in. A film was made of her. Ingrid Bergman played her in the movie. Okay, and it was called The Inn of the Sixth Happiness. I heard her speak way back in the 1950s. I was just a young Christian. She was in the Presbyterian Church that was opposite the Civic Theatre. Remember the old Civic Theatre? No, sort of the flea bag of the three, wasn't it? she was speaking there. They had to get a box to put her on so she could be up high enough so we could see her over the pulpit. And over the road, the movie was playing of her life. Oh, she was denouncing the movie. Oh, it's ridiculous. Nothing like it, nothing like it, nothing like it. But an amazing woman. She told us about the kids that they got over and kept safe from the Japanese. When the war was over, you had the development of the Mao Zedong era. There were 16 teenagers who were with her. They took all 16 teenagers. They put her in imprisonment. They took the 16 teenagers and they put them in 16 different schools so they could be indoctrinated away from Christian faith. What they found was that all 16 were having an influence and others were becoming Christians. And so finally, they could not get the better of any of them, and she said they lined them all up and they were to deny their faith in Jesus Christ or die. She said, they brought us out to watch. I'll never forget it, she said. I stood there and I just watched. And the first one they chose was a beautiful young lady, about 15, she said. I didn't think she was a very strong lady, but young girl, but she said, I'm just crying for you, you know. And she said, I didn't know what I wanted her to say. And what she said was, I believe in Jesus Christ. And she was killed. Head was cut off. That kind of thing has happened just in my lifetime and in most of many of yours. And it's happening today in different parts of the world. Now, we don't have to stand up against that, do we? Nobody's trying to kill us. No one's trying to punch us around or anything else. But do we stand for the things we believe in? Do we know what we believe? I have a dear friend. Been a dear friend since I was 20 years of age, and we talk to each other on the phone every week. Have for years, all those years. He was in Wollongong for a little while. Came up to work some kind of accounting thing with BHP just for a year, and we became really good friends. He grew up in a Christian home. At about 13 years of age, he felt God said, you are to be a missionary. He was so strong with that. And when I met him, you know, he was just talking, that's what he's going to do. While he was here in Wollongong, he would spend his Saturdays down at Bomaderry at the orphanage there for the Aboriginal children. You know, he'd play with them, take them on hikes, do all sorts of things with them. He just loved them. He fell in love. This happens, doesn't it? Fell in love. The love of a Christian girl, beautiful girl. She too was a dear friend of mine. And he said, look, I can't marry you unless you're willing to be a missionary. So she agreed. After they got married, she said, well, just one condition, that we own a house, so we've always got something to come back to. Now, he's very accomplished in business, and within a few years, they owned their own home, and now they had two children. And she said, well, not while the children are in primary school. It wouldn't be fair to them to take them to a foreign country. So when they got to high school, they wouldn't get a proper education if we take them out of Australia. And on it went. And so they have both served Christ. They've both been fantastic Christians. I love them both. But he has always lived with the sadness that he felt God wanted him to do something and he never did it. There's a very old hymn. It's called Dare to be a Daniel. Remember that old hymn? There's a verse in it. God gives his best things to the few who dare to stand alone. God gives his second best to those who will not take his best. Take his best, won't you?